And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
So this week it's Rushmore. Listener recommendation.
Yes, we could get some readers if we go. We could pay someone to transcribe the podcast, get them bound in leather volumes, and send them out to aficionados of our work.
All two of them.
Well, my flatmate, she's doing a transcribing job at the moment, so we could just ask her, add it to a list. Perhaps I could take the C90s cassette tape that I guess should be sent. I mean, that's how it'll work, right? And just replace it with the C90 cassette tape we record these podcasts on.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's good. We're just recording this on a little Sony tape recorder.
Didn't you want to do that? Record a C90 podcast?
I did,
yeah. And then send it out to those who write to us, so we post them out.
It'd be a special edition.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do that. So, yes. Sorry, Rushmore.
Rushmore, yes. So this was a recommendation from Ian Twitty, I think. One of our first recommendations.
Yeah.
We finally got around to watching it.
Yeah, really. We're on a recommendation roll at the moment with our last one, which was Zatoichi, which was recommended by your friend Sam.
That's right.
And now Rushmore this week. I don't know. We probably won't go for a recommendation next week. We don't want to go. We don't want to send the listeners power mad.
We'll see how it goes.
They need to know who's boss, Lewis.
Anyway, Rushmore. So this film is, I think, Wes Anderson's second film, or certainly one of his biggest.
Yes, I believe his first one was Bottle Rocket.
Yeah, I've not seen that. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't, no. But this certainly was his first kind of mainstream success, I feel. And it's the first one that introduced most people to Wes Anderson, the man, the director. The man.
Yeah, so I suppose his most famous film is probably The Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, The Life Aquatic.
I do love The Life Aquatic.
Great film. The Darjeeling...
Limited, yeah.
Limited. What else has he done?
Well,
those are his big ones, those certainly, big ones. Yeah. I mean, you've seen Darjeeling Limited. You've also seen The Royal Tenenbaums and Life Aquatic. I've seen Life Aquatic and The Royal Tenenbaums as well. And I think certainly we've enjoyed those films of his we had seen, we'd particularly enjoyed. Mm. And if you go back to our Submarine podcast, we talk a lot about the kind of Wes Anderson feel of that film. Mm. So it was a bit odd that we'd not, but neither of us, in fact, had seen this one.
No, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, the plot of the film is basically this kid.
Well, the pitch and plot, I guess the pitch would be unscholarly scholar seeks love and makes friends with a 50-year-old man. but doesn't fall in love with him. That's probably not the best pitch. If you did that in a Hollywood meeting, I imagine they'd be like, hang on. Let me just double-check that. Yeah, and at heart, the plot is Jason Schwartzman plays Max Fisher, a pupil at the Rushmore Academy, who, although he has several extracurricular activities and seems to be at heart of a lot of what the school does, he's failing his exams and is on the brink of being expelled. He got in on a scholarship, is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
And it's just about him kind of, I don't know, having a sort of breakdown in a strange way, isn't it? So that things kind of falling apart and him putting back together. He falls in love with his teacher. He becomes friends with Bill Murray. Not the actor, the character that Bill Murray plays. And it just sort of follows him as he gets expelled and then tries to get back into the school. Mm. And, typical Wes Anderson, films. It's not so much the plot isn't massively important, it's more the interactions of the characters.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. The awkwardness of their kind of interactions and very odd kind of characters. Max himself is a very strange kind of... He's grown up. It was very, very grown up in the way he acts.
Mm.
Far beyond his years.
Yes and no. He's acting like he's a grown up, but as the film shows, he's still very much a boy. Mm. With very much a kind of childlike view on things. He just doesn't realise that it's a childlike view on things. Mm. He reminded me a lot of, perhaps this is why Submarine really hit us as a Wes Anderson film. He really reminded me of Oliver Tate in Submarine.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, precocious, slightly sensitive boy who kind of gets involved in an adult world really just just before his time, and his interactions with that Outer World kind of make him grow up a bit. Mm. But when he starts sort of getting involved, it's just a little beyond him. Doesn't quite understand. Mm. Doesn't quite get it.
It's quite an odd cover of this film. The DVD cover, it's kind of got this Max kind of like punching the air in kind of a, like a red beret. It looks like some sort of communist salute.
Yeah, it does. And actually, I mean, I've seen that image lots of times before, and it does slightly mislead. I was expecting quite a different film. Mm. I don't know if you were, Lewis.
It looks like a political kind of activist kind of thing.
Not so much that. I was expecting much more him to be a much more of a rebel. Mm. I was expecting it to be, I guess, a bit like he kind of is a rebel, and then I knew he kind of falls in love with his teacher, so perhaps him falling in love with his teacher sort of forces him to try and conform, and it's all about him trying to fit in, despite the fact he's this, you know, out-and-out rebel. But it's not really like that at all.
He's not really a rebel, though. If anything, he wants to be in the system.
He loves Rushmore.
He absolutely loves Rushmore. Yeah. He's absolutely despairing when he gets expelled.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It was different to what I thought it was. So I guess, now I've said that out loud, that sounds a slight cliche of the rebel who suddenly feels like he has to change his ways. No one really believes him, and then perhaps he goes into his old ways for a little bit of the film, and then whatever he seeks, he eventually gets.
I don't know. It's a bit of an odd mishmash, really, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah, I get the impression that you weren't.
Impressed. It's an interesting. We talked a little bit about it before we started the podcast, and I feel like having seen Wes Anderson's later films, I think they're much much better than this film.
Yeah, because I think one of the things we were saying is how it wasn't just Ian who recommended Rushmore. You know, several people we've sort of spoken to and met had recommended Rushmore. I'd certainly wanted to get, really wanted to see it because I'd heard it's, Wes Anderson, it's one that, Wes Anderson's film I've not seen. Lots of people talk about it, it's this fantastic, great film. But I think we both agree that actually it feels. I think we perhaps slightly spoiled it for ourselves by seeing his later films first. Mm. Perhaps if we'd seen Rushmore first of all, it would have the impact that it seems to have had on other people.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's certainly very different from the kind of mainstream films you'd normally get. Mm. It's very stylized, and Wes Anderson's got a very kind of close sense of his own kind of style. I mean, and you can see there's various things in it that get carried over to later films, like the montage sequences and kind of using captions to introduce kind of different activities at the beginning is something that is carried over later on.
I think it's on the Internet Movie Database. There's a little bit about Wes Anderson tropes or Wes Anderson techniques and things like filming underwater.
Yeah.
As you said, captions. There's a couple of... certainly he's obviously invented his style, or inventing his style throughout this film.
Yeah, definitely. The thing that I just didn't like about it was that it just sags in the middle. It really sags, I think. Up to the bit where he gets expelled, it's kind of trotting along quite nicely, and then it just seems to lose its way a bit, and I never really felt it found its way back on track. And by the end, I just felt the whole thing was kind of getting a bit inconsequential,
I did as well. I felt the same thing, where with him... The last sequence, I think they felt, I don't know, I kind of got the feeling that I should care more than I did.
Mm.
And the whole kind of part at the end where all the kind of characters of, I suppose...
Reconciliation,
reconciliation, realising certain things and learning certain things. I wasn't that bothered.
I kind of lost interest by
that. Yeah, it's a shame. Because I don't know, I did enjoy it. I did like it.
Mm.
But I guess... Yeah, I guess I just was thinking, at the end I just thought, well, that was a pretty good Wes Anderson film. There are better Wes Anderson films.
Yeah.
And if I'm in the mood for that character-driven, sort of
stylized.
Yeah, hyper-stylized sense of reality. Mm. Yeah, I would much rather sit down and watch Life Aquatic or the Royal Tenenbaums.
I guess the thing with those films is that there's just so many memorable parts to them. Whereas with this film, I mean, I watched it a couple of weeks ago before I passed it back to you, and now I really struggle to actually remember what happened in it, even though I only watched it quite recently. Whereas Life Aquatic and Royal Tenenbaums, I can picture things instantly, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose I've seen those films a couple of times, so perhaps...
Well, I mean, you say it, but I think I've only seen the Life Aquatic once, which is at cinema. Mm. I think I've only seen the Royal Tenenbaums once, but as you say, there are sequences, bits in that, which really stick in my mind.
Mm.
I think we don't want to compare them constantly to things that came afterwards. And you know, I suppose we should really just judge it as a film in itself. Mm. I suppose the only reason why we say that is because it's hard for us to imagine the impact this must have had when first watching it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Without seeing,
you need to put
Wes Anderson
context.
Getting bigger and better.
It's like when we're talking about Dracula, you know, the 1953 version.
Yeah.
It's so camp and ridiculous now that it's difficult to see it in its original context.
As a proper horror film, and that was this film was very different to anything else currently out there.
But I suppose apart from the kind of slightly baggy plot, the thing that really stuck with me, what was kind of irritating, was actually the main character of Max.
Max, yeah.
He's not a likable character, and end of the film, I found myself actively disliking him. And I don't know whether I was meant to get behind him or not, but certainly I was just getting irritated by him.
I think so, but I mean, it's interesting because pretty much every character decides they don't like him at some point in the film.
Mm.
He needs to hit rock bottom in a way for him to recover and learn humility, I guess, and realise that he doesn't know everything.
Yeah.
And then after that, he kind of climbs out of that. But I agree with you. Yeah, I did find him quite annoying.
Mm. Yeah, I think by that point, I'd pretty much, yeah, he's just annoying.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, that aside, I think it's definitely an interesting film, but flawed.
Flawed indeed. Right, before we get too far, well, we've talked a fair bit about that.
We've got quite into it.
Let's do the trivia quiz. Let's just get that damn trivia quiz out of the way. Trivia!
Quiz!
Trivia!
Quiz!
Trivia, trivia, trivia!
Quiz!
I hope everyone's enjoying our new
trivia quiz jingle.
Yeah,
wow.
The reason why we didn't mention them in the last one, because we only recorded them after we recorded the Zatoichi podcast. So I wonder if anyone noticed that. we've recorded several, so look out for those. I'll try and put a different one. I'm editing this one with this week's one, so I'll try and put a different one out there this week.
Okay, trivia quiz.
Right, okay. Now, in the film starts with Max reading a book called Diving for Sunken Treasure.
Oh, right.
And it's by a particular author who was the real-life inspiration for Steve Zissou. Who is Zissou, I can't remember. Yeah, it's the character in Life Aquatic.
Yeah.
Who is the real life inspiration?
I know this. Jacques Cousteau.
Okay. The second question. Max is, as we said earlier, that Max is not particularly scholarly, but he has lots of extracurricular activities. Name five of those extracurricular.
Five?
Yeah, because again, I always do this, but because you say five, if I say three, I could just reel off three straight away.
Oh my God. Do you know, I would struggle to even name one, I think.
Well, come on. Well, one is quite an important plot point. One you see him do several times in the film.
Okay, these are complete guesses. Fencing? And I'm fairly sure it was in the fencing club.
Okay, yeah.
Fencing, go-karting.
Okay.
Do you know, I can't remember any of them. I'm going to have to just go with those two.
Those two?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And finally, Jason Schwartzman was introduced to the casting director by which famous family relation?
I'll
give you a clue. This person has worked with Bill Murray as well.
Oh, complete guess. Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd. Okay. I'll just make a note of that. Dan Aykroyd. Okay.
Wrong. Okay. Some interesting ones for you.
Good.
Film's called Rushmore.
Yes.
Of course, there's another famous Rushmore, Mount Rushmore.
Right.
Name the four presidents carved into Mount Rushmore. Okay. A quarter point for each.
All right. Okay. So it's George Washington.
Yeah.
It's Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
It is is it Teddy Roosevelt?
Mm-hmm.
And who's the last? last one.
I'll give you. He's an old one.
He's an oldie. I can't think.
Well, we can come back to that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, Olivia Williams stars in this film as Miss Cross.
Lovely Olivia Williams.
She also stars in an episode of Spaced in a parody of which film?
Ooh, okay. Did Spaced do a film parody? ooh. I can't think.
Okay. Do you want a hint?
Yeah, okay, go on. Give me a hint.
She plays a cyclist.
Oh, okay then, yeah. So do I have to name the episode or name the film parody?
No, just the name of the film.
Okay, it's The Sixth Sense.
Okay, and last one. Wes Anderson directed a film version of a Roald Dahl story in 2009.
A Roald Dahl story?
Yeah. What was it?
2009?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't think.
I don't know.
Well, I'll take a guess, even though I'm pretty certain it's not it. We'll say George's Marvelous Medicine.
Okay. Right then, what are my answers? How did I do?
Okay, first question. It is indeed Jacques Cousteau. It's the only French we know, Jacques Cousteau.
La plume de
Meton. He did indeed write Diving for Sunken Treasure. Oh. What a great book to write.
That is very good.
I would die a happy man if I might write a. I might just write, call my autobiography something like, I don't know, tomb raiding. No, that won't work.
50 Years of Chinaman by Ian Pope.
50 Years of Chinaman.
Just 50 Years of Chinaman. Yeah.
Not quite what that you mean by that.
That's just what Danny Baker always jokes that he's going to call his autobiography.
Oh, really? 50 Years of Chinaman.
50 Years of Chinaman.
Oh, 50 Years at Chinaman. Yeah. Oh, I thought he said 50 Years of Chinaman.
Just invasion of the Chinaman.
Well, I don't know. Or that you, perhaps, a homosexual has a certain thing for Chinaman.
50 Years of sleeping with Chinaman. Actually, maybe that would be a good title for your autobiography.
The five of Max's extracurricular activities. You named fencing and go-karting.
Yeah.
There was also, of course, beekeeping.
Beekeeping.
Which is quite an important plot point.
I did like his extracurricular activities. They were pretty funny.
You also had the debating society.
Of course.
I think he was also in the Scouts. What else? There's a few loads of those. Those are the five. Loads, and he was a journalist as well, and ran the school newspaper. And Jason Schwartzman was introduced to the casting director. It was at a party. It was Sofia Coppola.
Oh.
Director of Lost in Translation and other films.
That's right. And she directed The Virgin Suicides as well, which I loved. I love that film.
I've not seen The Virgin Suicides.
It's very good. We should do it. Let's write it down.
Write
a little note down.
Okay, Virgin Suicide. So your points were... Ooh.
Do I get a fifth?
Well, you got two. Let's just say one and a half. I'll be generous.
So your ones, I think you did pretty well. Four presidents carved into Mount Rushmore. Washington, yes. Teddy Roosevelt, yes. Abraham Lincoln, yes. Last one was... Final chance.
It's something... I can't think.
Okay. Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, Thomas Jefferson. That wasn't the one I was thinking of.
Olivia Williams starred in Spaced in a parody of The Sixth Sense, you're right. She plays an irate cyclist. Yeah. Interestingly, she actually starred in The Sixth Sense.
Ah,
as Anna Crow.
Anna Crow?
Yes.
A crow?
Yes, as a crow. Yeah. And Wes Anderson in 2009 directed Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Was it a crow who didn't realise it had died? Fantastic Mr. Fox, of course! Damn it! So, did I win that? I think I did, didn't I?
I think you did. Yeah.
Claim that as a win.
Nice one.
Let me ring my winning bell. Bing, 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 bing! We should record a little sting at the end. Whoever wins should go da e and da. I know you could have one that just says Lewis.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Okay, so I suppose for us, our generation, Lewis, the thing that always catches the eye about this film, the thing that always interests us, is the fact it stars Bill Murray.
Bill Murray.
Bill Dr. Peter Venkman Murray, as if he'd known.
As if he's done any other films apart doesn't from matter. Ghostbusters.
I don't care. That's the thing that it'll always be in my mind. And
hey,
my
it's Venkman!
Would you say it if you just ever see him? Just shout, Venkman! God, he would hate that.
He would hate that. He'd hate most things, though, really. He'd hate you talking to him.
He did dress up as a Ghostbuster, didn't he? In a couple of. About last year, sometime, to give an award. He just came on stage dressed in his old uniform. It was brilliant. We had a proton pack on and everything.
Was he drunk?
That would have been weird if he just always carries it around, yeah. So when he gets drunk.
I thought I was a Ghostbuster.
I was a Ghostbuster! But he's great in this.
Yeah, he is great.
He's really good. I remember our friend Jason saying he had a friend who once said, Bill Murray has been in a bad films, but he's never been bad in a film.
Yep.
I don't know about that Garfield. I guess he's only a voice in that.
Yeah, I mean,
but that, I know what he means.
He was definitely the best thing in the Garfield film.
Yeah, I suppose I've not seen it, but I'm sure
I've seen bits.
We won't add Garfield to the list, though.
No.
But I think he's. What is it about him? What is it about Bill? It's that Dr. Peter Venkman Murray.
It's that laconic gaze. The fact that he really couldn't care less about anything that's going on around him, and that just somehow makes him attractive.
Bill Murray plays Herman Bloom, sort of 50-something friend. He becomes a friend of Max Fisher.
That's right. It's a bit of a weird situation there, 50-year-old, a friend with a 15-year-old.
Yeah, but no way at any point does it feel odd within the confines of the film. It feels completely and perfectly natural, doesn't it?
It's interesting because Max is a very grown-up child and he's a very childish man.
Yeah.
So it's kind of somehow works.
Yeah, he... In the film, the character, Bloom, has got two teenage children who go to school with Max. That's how they meet. Mm. And it's quite funny. He doesn't like his own twin. They're twin boys, and he doesn't really like them.
Yeah.
Apparently, Bill Murray didn't actually like the actors, full stop, who played the twin boys. He found them quite irritating.
It wasn't acting?
No, apparently some of the bits where he kind of improvised the insults were things he just came to him and really didn't like them.
But I think the great thing about Bill Murray's character in this is the air of desperation he gives off.
I love he's just got a fag just out on the air, like kind of like little sort of.
We should say fag as in cigarette here
American
listeners.
Yeah, like a ciggy, just like kind of. How would you describe that? It's kind of just almost dropping out of his mouth, but not kind of just sort of stuck to the lower.
It takes
lower
a lot
lip.
Of skill. That
did you? I don't know if you noticed, but actually in the family portrait, he's got a cigarette the exact same way. It's just brilliant. As you say, it's that kind of laconic, and it's just charm as well. Mm. He brings so much charm to it. And he's, even though he's sad, you can understand why people like him.
Yeah,
and why Olivia falls in love with him. He's still, even though he's slightly desperate and he's a lot older than her, he sells the fact that he could get the English rose.
The English rose.
It's Olivia. Yeah.
We should talk about the soundtrack.
Yeah, cracking soundtrack.
Really good. I mean, Wes Anderson's always been great at picking out some great tunes. I think I mentioned in an earlier podcast, the soundtrack to the Darjeeling Limited is possibly one of my, it's my favourite film soundtrack, I think.
A Life Aquatic has got Portuguese David Bowie songs.
Yes.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, though. It's fantastic. I can't think, Royal Tenenbaums, I remember the music being good, but I must be honest, I can't think offhand anything in particular, but I certainly remember the music being pretty good. In this, it's very much influenced by kind of, at one point they were just going to use Kink songs for the soundtrack.
Kinks are one of those bands that are very underrated, I think.
They've got
some real shocking kind of songs, but they've also got some real, real gems. So
It's
just a case of wading through the dross to get to the
end. I think also the Kinks were... Yeah, they were unfortunate because they were around until the 80s.
Yes.
They didn't split in the early 70s. And I guess, the Kinks... I mean, they're up. They're from the same time as the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Who. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's stiff competition.
It's interesting though. I think the Kinks' most famous songs, like "Dedicated Follower of Fashion," are actually some of their weakest, I think. Mm. Whereas stuff like "Power Man" and "This Time Tomorrow," which are on the Darjeeling Limited soundtrack, are practically unheard of outside of the kind of the fans. But they're actually their best tunes.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, Waterloo Sunset is probably my favourite King song. I know that's quite a famous one, but that was I remember listening to that when I was in Vancouver, and it made me really homesick for London. It's the only it was the only time I probably got homesick.
Yeah.
And I just listened to that. I was like,
it's a great tune. I saw Ray Davies do it at Glastonbury, and it brought a tear to my eye. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Cried. But they decided against it. But they just went still with a kind of very 60s British Invasion feel. So you've got things like Cat Stevens, The Faces.
Yeah. And John Lennon doing Oh Yoko. Again, one of my very underrated tune. Love that tune.
Yeah, no.
Oh Yoko.
Oh. Every time you do that, I just want to go. Oh Yoko. Oh.
It sounds like Shaken Stevens. Okay, so the best bits of the film.
Well, a couple of strong bits. I think there's a moment where Max, he's got the crush on Olivia, the English teacher. Well, he's declaring his love, he's declaring how much he... and he's desperate to kind of show what... it's about how grown up he is. And she just basically says, this is not going to happen. I mean... Might have to swear here. We swear anyway, don't we? I don't know why I was suddenly worried about
it. You can use a substitute word.
She goes, where did you think this was going? Did you want to flip me? I don't know why I suddenly become so coy. But anyway.
Oh, I like it. It's good. It's just, you could play this to your kids. Yeah. You could play this to your kids without worrying.
This is the one. This is the one that's going to be played to little Lewis. Little Ian.
God.
Two girls. and she just says, where do you think this is going? And he just says something like, oh, why are you reducing it to that? Why? And she just goes, only someone who's never done that would ever say that's a reduction. And I was like, that's such a kind of, and like, she suddenly, there is a sort of power suddenly within her. Mm-hmm. But up until that point, she's just seen as a slightly meek, nice and friendly, but suddenly you see you see her as an adult, and I think Max, the character as well, suddenly sees her as an adult and sees that, she's been talking to me like a child because I am a child, and suddenly she addresses him as an adult and he can't cope with it. And I think, it's just really sort of powerful. And it's not funny, obviously, but I think it's quite a powerful scene.
Yeah, it is a very good scene. Yeah, it definitely stands out. I struggle to pick a favourite scene to put it. Like I said, I found a lot of it. I don't know, I just forgot about it. But one thing that does stand out to me is Brian Cox as the headmaster. I don't think we've talked about him yet. I love Brian Cox.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
And the bit where Max brings him out of his coma by appearing in the room, I think I just love that scene. He just kind of goes, Max! kind of rises out of his bed.
it's a slight spoiler, but I think pretty much the description of the film says this, where Max gets expelled and has to go to the local kind of normal high school, which is...
Grover Cleveland.
That's it, Grover Cleveland. Do you know I'm sure you read this on the Wikipedia page as well as I did, but the two schools are actually next door to each other real life. Both in Houston. Anyway, so he goes to the school, and at the beginning, I actually thought, oh, here we're going to see him being like beaten up or made a mockery of, or, because he turns up in this kind of slightly tough-looking high school, and he's wearing his blazer, and he does a little intro speech and tries to introduce fencing. But what I really liked was actually, you don't really see it happening, but it's obvious he ends up kind of having the exact same role in that school as he does in the Rushmore Academy. Mm. So he ends up like running the theatre group, he's like a cheerleader, and he ends up becoming quite important and quite a well-known character within the school very, very quickly.
I've got to say, that also reminded me of another good bit, which is the play at the end. Heaven and Hell, which is kind of seems to be heavily kind of based on Vietnam War.
Yeah.
I found it quite charming.
Very much so. Yeah. Again, I suppose that charming in the sense, even though obviously the play has got incredible effects, really, for like a school stage play. But you can imagine though. What they do very well in that is they show how seriously the students take it. And it's easy to forget when you're that age how important things like that are and how seriously you know, when you're 14, 15, you take things like that, and it becomes everything. It's so important, and you do throw yourself completely into it to try and make it as best as it can be, as good as it can be. They capture that very, very well, I think. Any weaker bits?
Well, I think for me, there wasn't really a weak scene so much. It was more just, like I said earlier, about the plot being a little bit baggy. And also particular about, it felt like a one-trick pony, in the sense that the kind of the humour, especially at the beginning, is derived from this kid Max kind of acting beyond his years, and the kid, the adults around him treat, kind of deferring to him as like a superior almost, despite the fact he's only 15. And it's pretty funny, especially with the kind of his sidekick, I forget his name now, Dwayne or something. Dirk, I think it is.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he's even younger and kind of shorter, and yet he's acting like an adult as well.
Yeah.
But that kind of gag, by the halfway through the film, that's getting pretty tired.
Yeah.
And I just felt that it didn't, it wasn't good enough to sustain it to the end. You know, it's a funny idea, but it just didn't last the distance.
No, I agree. I would say, just while I think about it, actually, you saying, mentioning Dirk, he does have one, actually, the bit that made me laugh out loud in the film. Because I didn't really laugh out loud much, but where Bloom and Olivia are sort of having their little date, their first date, and you see them sort of walking along, and it's sort of camera pans out, you just see Dirk watching them. And goes, dun, 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 dun. But yeah, no, I think I agree with you. I also felt, I don't know if this was on purpose, but it did feel like the film seemed to start ideas and not quite see them through. So, for example, Max and Bloom have their, Herman have their falling out, and they seem to start having these kind of like, you know, having these sort of childish pranks with each other, but they only do like two or three and then just stop. And there was a couple of moments like that where I feel, oh, this, you know, when Max is expelled, he goes to the state school, and but you only see that for like a minute or two, really, in the entire film. Like, it always felt like, oh, okay, we're going to see a new plot development here, but it doesn't. It sort of starts it, but then doesn't really make anything of it.
Yeah, do you see what I mean? Yeah, it starts and starts. I mean, you know, that whole feud between Bloom and Max, you felt like that was going to spin out into something
much
bigger.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be like the major part of the film.
But actually,
and it doesn't really last long at all.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So would you recommend it? It's like, I kind of know what you're going to, are you going to say. I think if you like Wes Anderson, I think you have to really see this.
Yeah.
Because it was their first mainstream success film. First time they used Bill Murray, of course, who's, you know, become a real staple of their films. And it just, it does feel like a Wes Anderson film. It has a lot of what you like in a Wes Anderson film. It's just the kind of, I suppose, to our eyes anyway, I would say, or to my eyes, the kind of rough cut. Just as they were kind of getting their formula right, and that formula is perfected in, say, The Royal Tenenbaums or The Life Aquatic.
I'd say, basically, if you hadn't seen a Wes Anderson film, I'd say go and watch The Royal Tenenbaums or go and watch The Life Aquatic.
Yeah.
But if you are a fan of Wes Anderson, then, you know, watch this film. But I wouldn't go to this one first, basically.
No, no. Okay, right, so...
Musical interlude?
Yes.
We haven't done this for a while, have we?
No.
So it's Ian's ukulele challenge. Are you getting better now?
Bum, 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 bum. No, I'm not.
So what are you going to do for us this week?
Well, Lewis, we mentioned the soundtrack earlier, and there's a fantastic song by The Faces. Oh. Ooh la la.
Ooh la la.
Ooh la la. And I had a look. I wasn't sure. I was like, oh, could I do that? It's only two chords, Lewis. Only two chords.
You're laughing.
So I may struggle, but at least I won't struggle with knowing which chord is which. So two chords, D and E7 for those playing along at home. So
right, take it away.
Are you going to sing along with me,
I'll
Lewis?
I'll sing along.
Right, okay. So, Lewis, are you ready?
Ready.
Ukulele player, ready! 3, 2, 1!
Spoke of women's ways. Field trip use you before you even know. Love is blind and you're far too kind, but you'll never let it show. I wish that I knew what I know now when I was younger. I wish that I knew what I know now when I was stronger. Is that it?
Yeah, that's as far as we'll go. I tried to sing along, but I couldn't.
I could see you trying. I screwed up the words halfway through anyway.
I found it too difficult to play two chords and sing at the same time. I don't know how real musicians do it.
I don't know.
I think we've talked about this before. I really should just record the track and then just sing over the track. And then we'll mix them together.
Blimey.
For our last podcast.
You're getting ahead of yourself.
When we do our last podcast, which will be a massive musical one, all the way through I'll be playing little different songs.
Yeah, so please do write in with your requests. Oh, dear.
So, that brings us to the end of this podcast.
Yeah, please do write in with your recommendations. You can follow us on 101films.wordpress.com. And if you want to email your suggestions, you can write to 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, found at that website.
Yeah, on Twitter we're at 101films.
And on Facebook we're just 101films, I think. So we'll join you next week with maybe something a little bit different. Unless Lewis gets ill again. Oh. So we have to have a week off. Hopefully he won't this time. Hopefully he'll manage it.
Fighting fit now.
His mum's given him some Calpol, so he should be all right now. And we'll see you next week.
Bye!